a workshop on computability or quantum computability of quantum field theories, and I know many of you are in the audience. Today's speaker is Sergey Bravny, who's a postdoc right now at the IBM Research Center. Without further ado, Sergey, please.
Okay, so I think that Michael is not in the mainstream of this workshop. It is not about quantum theories. I will talk about using randomized algorithm to simulate quantum system. And I'm interested in only one very specific simulation task, which is computing the ground state energy of system of interacting quantum states. As you well know, the main problem with simulation of quantum mechanics is that the dimension of the Hilbert space grows exponentially with the size of the system. So if, say, we have n-qubit system, then we need about 2 to n classical bits just to store a quantum state in a classical memory. Of course, this this problem has not stopped people from developing simulation algorithms. And roughly speaking, there are two strategies to cope with the exponentially large Hilbert space. And the first strategy is to use some simple variational states to approximate the actual ground state. And such variational states depend only on polynomial number of parameters, and we can try to find variational states with the minimum energy using only polynomial computational resources. And an example of such algorithm is density matrix renormalization group method, and it uses matrix product states as variational states. The second strategy is to use randomness to mimic quantum fluctuations. And the most known algorithm that uses this strategy is called Green's function Monte Carlo algorithm. Roughly speaking, this is a sort of random walk on the set of basis vectors. And this random walk gives us information about the whole Hilbert space by visiting only polynomial number of basis vectors. And if you believe that a quantum state provides only a statistical description of reality, then it is rather natural to use randomness to simulate quantum systems. My goal will be is to find some general class of a quantum system that can be simulated by a randomized algorithm. So this is the plan of the talk. I will start from defining the problem that we want to solve. It is called stochastic K-set. And this is a certain quantum analog of classical satisfiability problem. And the term stochastic emphasizes that it has relation both to stochastic processes and to quantum mechanics. Then I will show you efficient randomized algorithm that solves stochastic K-set. After that, I will tell about more interesting problems related to stochastic Hamiltonians. Because not all of you are complexity theorists, let me remind you first what is classical satisfiability problem. I will consider free set, but everything holds for K set as well. So input of free set is a list of 3-bit clauses, C alpha, and each clause is a Boolean function on n bits, but depends only upon values of some 3 bits. And here is an example of such clause. It depends on the first, third, and the eighth bit, and the clause is satisfied for all configurations of these bits except for this one. So in general, it can be written as a conjunction of 3 literals, and each literal is either the value of some bit or negation of the bit. And if you have some n-bit string x, they say that it satisfies the clause C alpha if it takes value 1, and it violates clause C alpha if it takes value 0. And now the problem preset is defined as follows. For yes instance, we can find n-bit assignment that satisfies all clauses. And for no instance, any assignment violates at least one clause in the list. As you may know, this preset program is complete for NP. Now we can define a quantum analog of preset program. Now, instead of a quantum analog of n-bit assignment is just some quantum state of n qubits. Quantum analog of 3-bit clause is a Hermitian projector that acts on some triple of qubits. So the input of quantum preset is just a list of such 3-qubit projectors, what I know, P alpha, and some extra precision parameter. They say that n qubit state theta satisfies a clause P alpha if theta is plus one eigenvector of the projector P alpha, and the state theta violates clause P alpha if it has weight at least epsilon on the orthogonal complement to P alpha. So the expectation value of P alpha on the state theta is at most 1 minus epsilon. We define quantum preset as exactly as in the classical case. For yes instance, there exists a state that satisfies all clauses in the list, and for no instance, for any n-qubit state, we can find at least one clause that is not satisfied.
Is there a promise, or are you saying we don't care?
We have a promise that either this or this is true, and we have to decide what is the case. This precision parameter should not be too small. It must be at least 1 over some fixed power of n. Otherwise, it might be too difficult to distinguish the two cases. First of all, if we consider quantum preset in which all projectors P alpha are diagonal in the computational basis, we get the classical preset. It means that quantum preset is also NP-hard, and it includes classical preset as a special case. The second comment is that there is a very simple relation between quantum preset and ground state energy problem. Say, if you have instance of quantum preset with projectors P alpha, we can define artificially defined as Hamiltonian H, which is just minus sum of all projectors. We can denote E0, the ground state energy of this Hamiltonian, and for yes instance, E0 is minus number of clauses and for no instance E0 is at least minus number of thousands plus epsilon, because any state violates at least one clause by epsilon. finally, this is the last definition. I can define stochastic preset. It is defined in exactly the same way as quantum preset. The only difference is that we require that all projectors D alpha must have real and non-negative matrix elements in the computational basis. This condition can be efficiently verified because each projector acts only on some triple of qubits, and there are only 64 layers of basis vectors to verify for each power. And of course, diagonal projectors are still a special case. They satisfy this condition because the diagonal projector has matrix elements of only 0 or 1. Now I have to specify more carefully what I mean by efficient algorithm for stochastic preset. As I said, this problem is NP-hard, so we cannot hope to literally solve it in polynomial time. And this is the problem that I'm actually going to solve. So the input of the problem is a description of some instance of stochastic preset. Description of some basis vector W and some accuracy parameter delta. And for this instance, we are promised that this instance of stochastic preset has satisfying the same assignment data. And this satisfying assignment has overlap at least delta this basis vector W. For no instance, there is no satisfying assignments at all. So in this program, we have some side classical information, this basis vector W. We are promised that if a satisfying assignment exists, then it has sufficiently large overlap with is a basis vector.
Does it have to be a basis vector, or could it be just any efficiently describable?
I think it should be a basis vector, or maybe a superposition of two or three basis vectors, but
okay.
Not very complicated. Okay.
Can you motivate by the stochastic preset is an interesting special case in the more general one?
the main reason is that I know how to solve it, and I don't know how to solve the general problem. At the end of the talk, I will give more motivation.
Can you give some examples, maybe?
Classical preset is an example of, is a special case of a stochastic preset. Another example can be constructed from stabilizer CSS boards, but it's not very interesting.
So that from the physics point of view, I mean, can you associate this problem to some physical Hamiltonian and spin Hamiltonian aware?
I don't know any physically non-trivial Hamiltonians that can be used to this stochastic case set.
Really, in the introduction of your paper, you mentioned a bunch of stuff. Was that just for play or something?
I will show you some examples at the end of the talk, but they are not case set problems. They are actually the ground state problems. I think this problem, stochastic preset, is has limited interest to physicists, but I hope that it has some interest to computer science. Okay, so I stated the problem, and this is the result that this problem has a randomized algorithm that runs in a time polynomial in n, epsilon and log delta. And the fact that running time is polynomial in log delta is important because it is obvious that if a satisfying, if some satisfying assignment exists, we can always find a basis vector that has at least this overlap this theta square root of 1 over 2 to n. And thus, if a satisfying assignment exists, description of such a basis vector W can serve as a classical proof that a satisfying assignment exists.
Why does that follow? How do you know that the theta exists then? I mean, because what if delta is very small?
If theta exists, I can always find a basis vector that has this overlap this theta.
Yeah, but what if it doesn't exist? Then you would have to say that there's no such basis vector.
Yes. So
it would be a proof.
Yes, so if a satisfying assignment doesn't exist, then the answer of this problem is no. And my randomized algorithm will output no.
So this comment, we shouldn't see right away why this is true. This just follows from your algorithm.
It's
a consequence of the theorem that you're going to prove.
Yes.
All right, thanks.
So are there any more questions about this problem? before I start describing the algorithms, let me show you some useful properties of non-negative projectors. So first of all, because there is one-to-one correspondence between projectors and linear subspaces, we can define operation of intersection of two projectors. This is a projector onto intersection of projectors P1, P2 is a projector onto intersection of subspaces, this projector P1 and P2. And one can easily prove that intersection of two non-negative projectors is again a non-negative projector. The second property is that we can always choose a satisfying assignment as a vector with non-negative amplitudes in the computational basis. It is very easy to see if a theta is eigenvector of non-negative projector P, then we can define a new space theta tilde such that amplitudes of theta tilde are absolute values of amplitudes of theta, and then one can show that theta tilde is also eigenvector of P. Find very simple classification of non-negative projectors. One can prove that any non-negative projector has this form. It is a sum of pairwise orthogonal rank 1 non-negative projectors. So these states, psi j, are pairwise orthogonal, and they have non-negative amplitudes in the computational basis. Now, try to explain how this randomized algorithm is constructed. So we have an instance of a stochastic free set. This project is P alpha. Then we can define operator G, which is the sum of all projectors divided by total number of the projectors. And for yes instance, it is clear that the largest eigenvalue of G equals to 1. And for no instance, every state violates at least one clause by epsilon, and so the largest eigenvalue of G is at most this. So we can separate it from 1 by this quantity, epsilon divided by m. Let me write it on a board because it will be used many times. And of course, matrix elements of G are non-negative because it is a sum of non-negative operators. Now, let us first consider yes instance of stochastic free set. Suppose we have some satisfying assignment theta, and as I said, we can always assume that theta is non-negative vector, and so we can write it as this. It is we have some set of basis vector S for which amplitudes of theta are non-zero, and amplitudes of basis vectors from S are all positive. Then, as I said, theta must be plus one eigenvector of G. Now we can define a random walk on the set of basis vectors using the following rule. Transition probability from basis vector x to y is the ratio of theta y to theta x times the matrix element of G. Because theta is eigenvector of G, you can see that these transition probabilities are normalized. If we sum up over y, we get 1 for every x. Of course, this definition of a random walk is not quite satisfying because, first of all, we don't know these ratios of the amplitudes theta y to theta x. And secondly, this definition is defined only for yes instance. And the correct definition shouldn't depend on the correct definition should be the same for yes and no instances. And this problem can be overcome using the following lemma. It says that for any satisfying assignment, we can compute this ratio of theta y to theta x efficiently. So if we have some non-negative projector P, and theta is eigenvector of P, supported on some set of basis vectors S, then first of all, for any basis vector from S, diagonal matrix element XPX is positive. And secondly, if for some pair of basis vectors XY from S, matrix element XPY is positive, then we can compute the ratio of the amplitudes using this simple expression. this lemma is simple consequence of the facts that I showed you, that every non-negative projector is a sum of rank one of negative projectors. And now we can uselessly amateur modify the definition of conditional probabilities such that it is the same both for yes and for no instances. Instead of defining conditional probabilities by this equation, we define it by this equation. So if matrix element of G between x and y is zero, then conditional probability from x to y is zero. And if this matrix element is positive, then there must be at least one projector P alpha for which matrix element between x and y is positive, and so we can apply this lemma. In general, it might happen that there are several different alphas such that this matrix element is positive, but let's agree that we choose the minimum alpha that satisfies this property. Let me also write this on the board. Of course, if you apply this definition of transition probabilities to no instance, these transition probabilities may be not normalized. They may be either over normalized or under normalized. And so we still can use this definition for no instances, but before making each step of the random walk, we have to verify that the transition probabilities are indeed normalized.
If they're not, then we can reject.
Yes, if they are not normalized, we know that the answer is no, and it is stops the random walk. Mm-hmm. It should be mentioned that this normalization test can be done efficiently because G is a sparse matrix. Mm-hmm. It is the sum of three qubit projectors.
Mm-hmm. But because everything is non-negative, it's almost as if the ground state we're looking for is the physical probability distribution.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so we can just sort of take a random walk on it, and we are.
So this is what I was wondering. I mean, at least address it at Hamiltonian, that is quite a good thing. Because you have all these positive elements there, right? So there must be something that gives you e to the minus beta h with the classical Hamiltonian that is giving you precisely this kind of state. So in that sense, I agree with him. There is always some classical problem behind this thing because all these data in the expansions are positive numbers.
It's still a coherent state that's being found, but because everything's positive,
it must be because these projectors have all diagonal matrix elements, it's not exactly a classical problem. It turns out that we can construct a random ball that somehow converges to the ground state of this problem. And this random ball is purely a classical. why this random bulk is useful for distinguishing yes instances and no instances? Suppose we let me remind you. So suppose we run this random walk for some fixed number of steps L that is chosen sufficiently large. Then for ES instance, these transition probabilities are always normalized, and so the random walk will make L steps with probability 1. However, if we apply this random walk to no instances, sometimes probabilities are not normalized, and so probability for the random walk to make L steps in general is smaller than 1. And using this formula, we can relate this probability to matrix element of L power of G between the starting point of the random walk and the final point of the random walk. And because for no instances, as I said, we can separate the largest eigenvalue of G from 1 by this quantity, this probability decays exponentially with L. I have no time to show you the detailed calculation, but this prefactor is a function only of number of qubits and this accuracy delta. So for fixed n and delta, we can always choose L sufficiently large, such that this probability is small. And then for no instance, somehow the random walk will terminate before making L steps with high probability. This is more formal description of the algorithm, let me briefly go through it. So if current state of the random walk is some basis vector xj, we first verify that all diagonal matrix elements of projectors P alpha on xj are positive. And this test corresponds to the first condition in this lemma, that these diagonal matrix elements must be positive. If this test is violated, we stop and we declare that the answer is no. We are trying to find a set of states that can be achieved from xj by one step of the random walk. I call this a set n of xj. This is a set of all basis vectors y for which this matrix element is positive. You can think about this set of nearest neighbors of xj. Then for every nearest neighbor of xj, we compute transition probability and verify what transition probabilities are normalized. And if they are normalized, then we generate the next state of the random walk. We need to perform one more step. At every step of the random walk, we compute and store this number, the ratio between transition probability and matrix element of G. If you look on this expression, then for positive, for yes instances, this number is just the ratio of amplitudes of solution and to subsequent states of the random walk. For no instances, RG is this number. Then we return to the first step. So this is the loop of the random walk. After we have made L steps of the random walk, we perform one more test. We verify that the product of these coefficients RJ is smaller or equal one over delta. And I don't have time to explain why we need this test, but it is related to this prefactor. We want this prefactor to be sufficiently small. And if all these tests are passed, then we declare that the answer is yes. So this is just a reminder of what is the problem that we are trying to solve. And this is the result that if the number of steps in the random walk is chosen such that this inequality is satisfied, then the algorithm from the previous slide solves this problem, and it has error probability 1/3. So for yes instance, the algorithm always outputs yes, but for no instance, the algorithm outputs no, this probability at least 2/3. And if you're interested, you can find all details in this paper.
So I think the answer to my question from before is W doesn't have to be a basis vector. It could be anything such that you can efficiently sample one of the basis vectors.
Or
you just need to get this random walk started somehow.
This vector W is used as a starting point.
Right, exactly.
And I mentioned that this stochastic preset might be interesting for computer science. Let me try to explain why. let me define a complexity class. Let me remind you of the definition of complexity class MA. MA stands for Merlin Fossil Games. This class was defined about 30 years ago by Papaya. MA is a class of decision problems for which answer yes can be efficiently proved, a proof is just a big thing that is given to verifier also by a prover Merlin, it is assumed that also can do only polynomial time probabilistic computation to verify the proof, while Merlin has unlimited computational power, a proof must satisfy completeness and soundness conditions. Namely, for yes instance of the problem, Merlin can always find a proof that convinces Arthur, for no instances of the problem, Arthur will reject any proof, maybe with small error probability. A decision problem is called MA complete if this problem belongs to MA and if any other problem in MA can be reduced to it. We can use this randomized algorithm that I showed you to prove these theorems. So a stochastic K set is the same problem as free set, but closures are K qubit projectors. We can prove that the problem stochastic K set belongs to the class MA for any constant K. The idea is that in order for Merlin to prove that a satisfying assignment theta exists, then you can send also some latest vector W that has large enough overlap this data. And then also receives this latest vector here, runs this random bulk algorithm that I showed you. Besides, one can prove another result that stochastic k-set is hard for MA if k is sufficiently large, it's at least 6. And it follows that stochastic 6 set is MA complete program. So the proof of the second theorem is rather technical, and you can find details in this paper. Now I will try to, okay, now I proceed to the second part of my talk, and it's, I think it's more interesting from physical point of view, and I will talk about ground state problems for local Hamiltonians. So let me remind you of the definition of this problem, what I call LH min. So the input of the problem is number of qubits n, description of some Hamiltonian h on n qubits such that we can represent h as a sum of k qubit interactions, h alpha. And also the input includes two threshold values, lambda yes and lambda no. Then it is required that the norm of these interactions are bounded by fixed power of n, and there is large enough gap between these thresholds. And the problem is defined as follows. For yes instance, the Hamiltonian H has a state with energy at most lambda yes. And for no instance, any state has energy at least lambda no. So in other words, for yes instance, the ground state energy of H is below lambda yes, and for no instance, the ground state energy above lambda no. But we are promised that it never sits in this interval between lambda yes and lambda no. this is a summary of results concerning this LH min problem. It was proved by Kitaev, Kemp, and Regev, but LH min is a complete program for a complexity class called QMA. And QMA stands for quantum Merlin Ossoff games. It is a quantum analog of MA. So a decision problem belongs to QMA if yes instance of the problem always have a proof, but can be efficiently verified by a quantum algorithm. And now the proof is arbitrary quantum state. Merlin gives this quantum state to Orser, and Orser performs polynomial time quantum computation to verify the proof. And we have this standard completeness and soundness conditions. And now the natural question is it possible to find some restricted class of local Hamiltonians for which LH min would be MA complete problem rather than QMA complete? And in order to answer this question, we introduced this class of stochastic Hamiltonians. A local Hamiltonian is called stochastic if it has real and non-positive matrix elements in the computational basis. Most strictly, every local, every k-qubit interaction, h alpha, must have real non-positive matrix elements. And stochastic Hamiltonians have several nice properties. So first of all, we can use Perron-Frobenius theorem to show that the ground state of stochastic Hamiltonians can always be chosen as a vector with real non-negative amplitudes. Then, of course, any classical Hamiltonian can be regarded as diagonal quantum Hamiltonian, and because we don't have any restrictions on diagonal matrix elements, any classical Hamiltonian is stochastic. Then another nice property is that if you consider Gibbs density matrix e to minus beta h, then it has non-negative matrix elements. It means that we can, for stochastic Hamiltonians, we can reduce the problem of computing quantum partition function to computing partition function of some classical Hamiltonian. Finally, of course, one can efficiently verify whether a Hamiltonian is stochastic.
So, what is the relation to the quantum k-set problem? Is that a special case of this problem?
So a relation.
Sorry, to the stochastic k-set.
Mm-hmm. The relation is that if we take any stochastic operator h alpha and consider the projector onto its ground state, then this projector is non-negative. So you can think about stochastic k-set as verifying whether we can minimize all terms in this Hamiltonian simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. So it's right, so it's a special case.
Yes.
Okay.
I think we just answered the other question. There are many examples of physical systems that are described by stochastic Hamiltonians. For example, the Eisen model in the transverse magnetic field, then Heisenberg ferromagnetic model. Heisenberg anti-ferromagnetic model is stochastic on arbitrary bicolorable graph. And finally, Hamiltonians that were used by Fartier, Wurtman, and Goldstone for adiabatic quantum computation are also stochastic. Of course, we can extend a definition of stochastic Hamiltonians to qubits or even infinite dimensional particles. Many systems of interacting bosons, such as Hubbard model, theorem 4, or Fermi-Einstein condensates, are described by stochastic Hamiltonians. Typically, Hamiltonian is not stochastic only if the system contains some fermionic piece of freedom.
So let me ask you a physics question. So would you consider the two-dimensional isinglass stochastic and the three-dimensional isinglass stochastic both? Stochastic, sorry.
Do you mean classical isinglass?
Yes, classical glass. The 2D and the 3D.
Yes, I consider them as classical Hamiltonian because they...
No, but could you consider as a stochastic Hamiltonian? Because one is empty hard, the other is not.
Yes, as I said, classical Hamiltonians are a subclass of stochastic Hamiltonians. So if you set all diagonal matrix elements to zero, you still have stochastic Hamiltonian.
Okay, that's fine. That's so the fact that you have an stochastic Hamiltonian doesn't mean you can solve the fission.
Well,
for example,
An NP-hard problem can have a tractable special case.
That's right. It's not claiming it can solve it.
Yeah, but that's what he's claiming.
Yeah, I don't claim, but I can solve, you know, this problem.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we cannot prove, but LHmin for stochastic Hamiltonians is may complete. Probably it is not may complete. But we still can prove several interesting results about it. First of all, we can prove that complexity of stochastic LHmin doesn't depend on this locality parameter k, as long as k theta equal 1, 2. Then we can prove that stochastic LHmin is hard for complexity class MA.
That actually follows just from the quantum
k-set. Yes, exactly, because stochastic k-set is a special case.
Right.
Finally, we can prove that stochastic LHmin is contained in the complexity class called AM. And AM stands for also Merlin games. This is also a probabilistic analog of NP. AM is a class of decision problems such that yes instance always have a proof that we can efficiently verify by classical randomized algorithm. But now the proof interaction between Arthur and Merlin. So Arthur can ask questions to Merlin. The number of these communication rounds between Arthur and Merlin must be constant. By definition, AM is extension of MA. So we can prove that stochastic LHmin sits between MA and AM.
So Aaron, Barbara told me that you put it in the FASTA SPK?
Yes, actually.
Is it hard for SPK?
No, we don't think it is hard.
You don't know that? All right, but it's in, that's an intermediate class between MA and AM.
Obvious corollary of these results is that it is very unlikely that stochastic LHmin is QMA complete, because otherwise QMA would be a subclass of AM, which I think is unlikely. One can ask, is it possible to generalize the random ball algorithm that I showed you to stochastic Hamiltonians to compute the ground state energy of stochastic Hamiltonians? The answer is that it's very unlikely. Here I show you an example of stochastic Hamiltonian. It has a classical part composed from sigma z operators. This classical part corresponds to a Max Hart problem. So we have some graph G, this adjacency matrix A, for every pair of nearest neighbors vertices UV, we add Eisen interaction sigma z, sigma z. Then we have a quantum part, which is just a transversal magnetic field in the x direction. Suppose we look on this smallest eigenvalue, this Hamiltonian, as a function of a magnetic field H. First of all, if magnetic field is zero, lambda is just the ground state energy of this classical part, and the classical part is defined such that it is the maximum weight of a part of the graph G. It is known that computing this maximum weight is an NP-hard problem. But on the other hand, if we, if this magnetic field is non-zero but sufficiently small, one can show that the ground state of this Hamiltonian is delocalized. So every basis vector appears in the ground state is amplitude at least 2 to minus 40 m. And at the same time, for sufficiently small magnetic field, computing the smallest eigenvalue is still NP hard. And so these simple examples, illustrate that if we are going to solve the minimum eigenvalue problem for this Hamiltonian by random Volt override, then Merlin's proof must include more information about the ground state than just some basis vector that has a large enough overlap with the ground state. Because in this example, every basis vector has large enough overlap with the ground state. So to conclude, I mentioned several interesting open problems. So the first of all, it's very interesting to understand computational power of adiabatic quantum computation for stochastic Hamiltonians. We know that adiabatic quantum computation with arbitrary local Hamiltonian is VQP complete. But if we restrict ourselves to stochastic Hamiltonians, probably it is not. And it would give some complexity class intermediate between VQP and VQP. Then the second question concerns this locality parameter K. For example, we can prove that stochastic 6 set is MA complete, but we cannot prove that stochastic 3 set is MA complete. It would be desirable to have some reduction from to have some reduction that reduces this locality parameter. Interesting question concerns one-dimensional spin chains. If we consider 1D spin chains with stochastic Hamiltonians, probably we can try to find efficient algorithm for computing the ground state energy. And as I mentioned in the beginning, the most known randomized algorithm for simulating quantum systems is Green's function Monte Carlo algorithm. And it works extremely well for some particular systems like the Heisenberg model. And it would be very interesting to make some exact statement about the performance of this algorithm in the worst case. I think I will stop here.
So, how different is your randomized algorithm to Green's function Monte Carlo, for example? Because in spirit, to me, it looks pretty similar.
The main idea is the same as in Green's function Monte Carlo algorithm. Somehow we use the power method to converge to the ground state, but the technical construction is completely different from the function Monte Carlo.
Which construction?
The definition of the random Volt is
the part, the zero part.
Yeah, the definition of transition probabilities is completely different.
Uh-huh.
So,
do you need to satisfy the equivalence and this kind of thing, or is not necessary?
So the problem is that in Green's function of Monte Carlo algorithm, we don't have any information about its amplitudes. And we just cannot apply this definition. And instead, in Green's function on Monte Carlo, we decompose this matrix G as a product of stochastic matrix and diagonal matrix. So P is stochastic matrix and B is diagonal matrix of V. And then these sample products of these weights on a random ball generated by P. So it's it's completely different from the algorithm that I showed you.
See, have you tried to solve a simple problem and just put in the computer and check if the parallel is legal or is more efficient or most effective or whatever?
No, I haven't tried.
Any further questions? Well, thanks everybody again.
Okay.